I think I probably talked to him a lot during a number of his de-expeditions, and I met him at several of the different conventions around the country. I was probably 19 years old at the time, and 19 or 20, and I had been on several expeditions myself, and this is after Chuck Swain had been killed at sea, and he was really on his own, and I asked him if I could ever join him sometime, and that's what led to my joining him.
What kind of person was he?
I think he was, I really couldn't say he was demanding, because we were dealing with probably almost over 15 years my senior, who had had all of these experiences, so I was like the crewmate because he had all the experience.
You went to a couple of places together, and you really were there.
No, we weren't. The first place we went to was St. Peter and Paul Rocks, which we absolutely did not go to. The history of that is that we rented a boat in Caracas, Venezuela, and we got out to sea and headed down towards Suriname, and it really got rough in that area, and all of a sudden Don says, well, we're here. And I said, well, what do you mean we're here? And here we are at sea, two crew members who spoke no English, and this guy said, this is where we are. Do you understand that? And I quickly understood that it was, I better just go along with this hoax, and that was it, of which I did.
And what happened afterwards?
We finished that, and I told them straight out that I was either getting off at the next stop, or we were going to Navassa, or else I wasn't going to stay whatsoever. And he assured me that we were going to Navassa. So we then sailed up the Caribbean, stopping at, I believe, St. Vincent, and then we stopped in Martinique just to refuel, and then we outran a hurricane, a really bad storm, and wound up, we were supposed to go to St. Thomas, but we literally missed St. Thomas and wound up in Ponce, Puerto Rico.
Did Don ever mention that he had cheated before?
Insinuated. He didn't come straight out and say it, but when I had an opportunity to look through his passport, I could see at different dates that he was supposed to be places. He wasn't there.
Now, at that time, rules and regulations were not as strict as they are today, and we all know that even the real gentlemen and big guns, Danny Wheel and Gus Browning, they really have not been always where they had claimed to be.
Add Dick Moseley to that, W0MLY, where he was supposedly somewhere in Africa, and the hotel he was in, transmitting out of, caught on fire. Literally, it was on the news, it was in the newspaper, and he was supposed to be two countries away.
But anyway, you must have felt a little bit uneasy when Don proposed to do a real bad thing, didn't you?
Oh, I felt awful about it. It was, I had never lied or cheated in my life, and this was the first time. It was the first and last time I've cheated in my life.
Did you decide during that trip that, okay, I take the next opportunity to leave?
I decided that to continue on to Navassa.
But you really went to Navassa, didn't you?
Absolutely, positively. And that was the funny part about the entire thing. And this is what totally disgusted me with the whole ARRL. They were out to get Don, and that was okay. But we circumvented the system, and we truly played the system for what the system could be done. But what I mean by that is that the system said that in any U.S. state or possession, you can operate for 48 hours without prior notification of the FCC. And what we did is that at that time, the Navassa Island was under the jurisdiction of the United States Coast Guard. The United States Coast Guard was under the jurisdiction of the Department of Transportation. We went to the Department of Transportation in Ponce, Puerto Rico, and got a signed document that gave us permission to go to Navassa Island. I guarantee you that the official who signed that document had as much idea of where Navassa Island was as he did Berlin, Germany. But that, you know, that may be. But we have a signed, sealed U.S. government document giving us opportunity to go to Navassa. So we sailed from Ponce to Jacmel, Haiti, where we were kept under arrest for 48 hours. And the reason we were arrested there is that we didn't know that Venezuela, who was the flag of the boat we were on, didn't have diplomatic relations with Haiti at the time. So we wound up finally getting on the air from our boat because they kept under confinement there, and getting some people in U.S. to call the State Department to get us out, which they did. And then we proceeded along to Navassa. And there is a famous photo on Navassa Island that when you get, the only way on Navassa is by climbing up a Jacob's ladder from the sea. It's kind of tricky because there's a lot of currents. But when you get up there, it's the remains of a hoist, because that's how the Coast Guard used to refill the island. And there's a blockhouse on the corner where a winch is held. And we painted our call signs on that, which years later, other de-expeditions who finally got official permission painted over. But we had official permission to operate, and we operated for 42 or 43 hours strictly within the legal limits of what we were unable to do. I will tell you that the first night that we were there, we were literally buzzed several times by Coast Guard airplanes with huge lights on them, lighting us up to try to figure out what kind of pirates we were or whatever. But they never sent a cruiser out to get us whatsoever.
So why was suspicion raised that you were not really on Navassa and that you were not really on St. Paul?
Well, Navassa, they always agreed we were there. The only reason the ARL, DX Awards Committee, wouldn't allow it, they said we didn't have the proper permission. Then I fully understood the vendetta that was going on with it, because it's, and mind you, this happened many, many years ago. We were there. We had the documentation. We circumvented the system. There's no two ways about that. With regard to St. Peter and St. Paul, there was always a thought that the antenna headings were the wrong direction, and they weren't far enough southeast out of the states that we may or may not have been there. And when Don and the ARL went at it, I basically told Don straight out, I will not lie. If I'm asked the question, I will tell the truth.
And did they ask you?
No, Don admitted it before they asked me.
But you would have done it?
Absolutely. I have it in writing that I will tell only the truth.
So did your part, Don and you, did your part no longer friends?
We didn't part enemies, but Don went his own way, you know, after that time. And I can't tell you exactly. The next time I heard from Don was when he was in jail.
You didn't meet each other afterwards?
No, absolutely not. He lived at my house for almost 30 days and literally was running his war against the ARL from my house. And my mother was not all that happy with that situation at all.
What a sad story to what happened to Don afterwards in all those years.
Oh, it's a sad story. This was probably my biggest wake-up call in life, in that I realized straight out the politics of organizations. I realized quickly right and wrong, which is something that I try to imbue upon my children, and I think I've done it fairly successfully. I am now the most black and white person that anybody knows. I will always tell you the truth, even though it may hurt. It doesn't make any difference to me whatsoever. You may not like it, but you're not going to know a story from me. Someone told me, a very, very wise man, his name was Bob Waters, W1PRI, who owned and formed Waters Manufacturing back years ago, and he had a nickname for everybody. Mine was TLB, which stood for The Little Bastard. And he once said to me during this whole thing, he said, TLB, you better always tell the truth, because you're not bright enough to remember all the stories that you may tell anybody. And that has stuck to me in a lifetime. And I have really believed that Don screwed himself up by his stories. And so many people have done the same thing. I mean, Gus Browning. You know, this is the thing with the ARL. They suspended me out of DXCC, which made no sense whatsoever because I didn't do anything wrong to DXCC. But they never let me back in, which was even funnier. And I did go to several places, operate several places, which they did accept for credit after that time. But they never did anything to Gus Browning. And Gus Browning, and everybody knew this, and I have the cards to prove it, literally would sell you a QSL card from a DXpedition. You wanted one? Oh, absolutely, no problem. Here it is. You know, make a donation. And they knew that. And they also knew he wasn't in many of the places he was in. I mean, I don't know if you've ever had a chance to travel to China, but I have a factory over there, and I have a whole manufacturing facility there. And you don't get into Tibet, and you don't get into China by sneaking in and operating a radio station there. And yet the ARL decides to give credit for these type of operations. So it's all a bunch of BS when it came to Mr. White and the rest of the people and John Huntoon, who I literally have absolutely no respect for. They did more harm to DX than any other two individuals that I've ever seen.
But at least you learned for your own life. And did you keep up hamming afterwards?
No, I really haven't kept it up. In fact, about 4 years ago, I took down my tower, and I did operate once in a while, and I probably will be operating from the People's Republic of China shortly, because I found a ham operator near our factory over there, and I'll probably be operating from there from time to time. I've operated from Hong Kong and Macau several times, and when I'm over there. But I still have my gear, but I'm not really active anymore.
Do you happen to have a newer QSL card?
No, I happen to have the same one. In fact, that's the one thing that I have saved all the years.
Okay.
Using the Don Miller. I don't remember who created that. I believe it was someone in the South, in Georgia or somewhere, who created all those QSL cards, like the bamboo. I have still used that, and I probably am the only one in the world that still does. We risked our lives, really risked our lives, climbing. I mean, can you imagine pulling up a piece of equipment 30 feet in the air, one with ropes, up a Jacob's, and climbing up a Jacob's ladder to bring piece by piece up onto this island? I've been very fortunate in my life, business-wise. I've been fortunate in life. And I've had the opportunity to meet some extraordinary people through ham radio in my life. So I'm very, very appreciative of ever getting into hamming. It's something that will always be in my blood. Maybe later in life I will be more active again. But the whole DXCC thing just absolutely, as I watched things go on there, and when you're 19 and 20 years old and you really see how systems and people and things are bought for money and people really ignore what is happening to the truth, it jades you for life.